Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTGA podcast. We are just over 6 weeks away from the start of the Ulster Championship. Cavan and Monaghan are playing on 31st of October, and then the big one from the quarterfinals is Donegal and Tyrone on the 1st of November. But obviously things have taken a little bit of a turn in the province in the last few days. Donegal has obviously moved to phase three, and there's a lot of restrictions in place there. And earlier in the week, the UK British Prime Minister Boris Johnson gave some kind of stark warnings about the situation in the UK as well, and which obviously inspired some restrictions in Northern Ireland as well in the six counties. So it's an interesting time in this very long winding road, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by, as always, Rory O'Neill, Sunday Game editor, Aidan O'Rourke, Sunday Game pundit, former Armagh footballer, and Queen's University director of sport, and performance sport manager at Queen's University. That's why I looked away from the screen, the camera for a moment there. I had to check Aidan's title. And Cathair Cain from the Irish News. How are we all doing, lads?
Good, Mikey.
Good, Mikey.
Well, Mikey, yep.
Good stuff, lads. Good stuff. Listen, it's been an interesting week, Cathair, in the life of a Ulster GAA journalist. They've been the rarely quiet weeks, but between the Donegal football final being called off, the inter-county panel having to isolate after a positive test, and team being kicked out of the down, well, not kicked out, team having to give a walkover in the Down Senior Football Championship. With the sun is nearly set on club now, but we're getting towards the time of county, and things are not running smoothly, it's fair to say.
No, I think there was always the possibility that it would go this way. Obviously, the indications early in this pandemic were that the winter time would possibly bring a second wave, and it seems to be sort of heading down that direction. And so nobody, I don't think anybody would be massively surprised. And to be honest, probably the lack of hiccup almost throughout the club championships, you know, that incident in Down was a rarity, whereas, you know, when you were going into it, you almost expected this to happen. And obviously, like, my own club was one of the 10 clubs that shut down in Derry at the very, very start, you know, when there was an outbreak around us, and you know, people were being ultra, ultra cautious, but the football hadn't started at that stage, and you were thinking, you know, if this happens, you know, one case around us shut down 10 clubs. and the next thing, you're thinking, well, sure, if one case comes during the championship, sure, it's going to blow the whole thing out of the water. And as it turned out, it wasn't too bad. It wasn't too badly affected, but we're getting signs that it just might be a wee bit more over the coming weeks. And obviously, infection rates rising on both sides of the border here. You know, I saw this morning, we're very high up around Derry and Strabane again as well, very high infection rates. And obviously, they're looking at ways to sort of close off the border to Donegal this weekend, which, you know, I just meant to go away to Donegal for the weekend, which isn't great. So, but there's very little you can do other than, you know, take the advice and go on and just try and keep playing. I think they've done the right thing. You know, I wasn't sure at the start whether it was the right thing to go back. And I think trying to play and trying to be sensible, and, you know, most people have been sensible and safe about it, and the sport itself doesn't seem to be doing any great harm. So just trying to stay within the lines.
Yeah. So it does seem to be, well, in the last week, obviously today, Micheál Martin, is today being Friday, Micheál Martin talking about exactly restricting movement between Derry, Tyrone and Donegal across the border, which is a big issue, and also, like, has, you know, reverberations away from, you know, it politically and everything else, talking about doing something like that, even if it's for public health. It does all seem to be in the west of the province. But Aidan, what is the situation? You're obviously living in Armagh and working in Belfast, or at least your job is in Belfast. I don't know whether you're working there or not. But in the east of the province, is there as much nervousness, or is this kind of seen as an issue on the other side of the province at the moment?
No, I don't think you can
I don't think you can bring geography into it, really. You know, I think everybody's experience at the moment is that incidences and cases are rising. I suppose I'm dealing with this on two fronts at the moment. Like a lot of people who maybe volunteer around clubs or whatever, I'm involved in the COVID committee and at my own club in Dromahtee. And while we haven't had any direct positive cases, the incidence of people being in close contact and been asked to isolate, et cetera, that has kind of exploded over the last 2-3 weeks. So staying on top of what the public health guidance is for all of that is obviously a chore on itself that you don't really envisage taking on when you volunteer to be the under 13 coach or whatever. So there's all of that. And then obviously from a university perspective, sport is slightly different from the rest of the campus in that necessarily so students are close together to train and play and what have you. So we're under a certain amount of pressure at the minute to make sure that all of the guidance is implemented and that public health advice is followed. And that is a chore in a university setting because 18 to 22, 3-year-olds, they tend to do their own thing and rules and regulations are secondary. And as you know, people that age kind of think they're bulletproof anyway. But again, incidents have exploded. We're in a kind of a different situation than most universities at the minute in that teaching is on campus. So the students are back on campus. And anybody who's connected to the Belfast third level situation will understand that there have been incidents sort of creeping across the province because there's been a first week back a term, house parties, the whole social element of things, which is normally the case in most universities, that kind of has exploded onto the scene and people are going home at the weekends. And that side of things is pretty messy at the moment. And the education piece around just what's at risk if people don't strictly follow guidance is a tough sell at the moment, because these students are coming off a 6-month lockdown or essentially and haven't seen anybody. Okay, they're connected sort of digitally, but back to college, the usual fresher week, all that entails, that's been a real challenge for the last couple of weeks now.
Yeah, and just for why are Queen's allowing students on campus if other universities are taking a different approach?
I might pass that upstairs, Maggie.
You can't speak for the university, though.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to give you all of the reasons, but
the definitive answer.
Probably the main one is financial, in that we would have a large amount of international students compared to a lot of third-level institutions on the island, and international fees would play a big part of our business model. And international students don't pay international student fees for remote learning. So that's not the only reason, but it's certainly a factor.
It's a reason.
It's a factor.
Rory, we've kind of got a long way through this club championship. We've discussed it a lot, but living with COVID and the restrictions and the lack of crowds and it's something we discuss most weeks, if not every week. But for the most part, we've kind of got through things unscathed. But for the Donegal football final to be postponed for a couple of weeks, that's a major thing. Like that was seen as almost the worst case scenario. And obviously in your own county, Cork, there was a couple of quarterfinals called off. So it does seem that, as with wider society, that coronavirus kind of creeped back in, and there's been a little incident here or a little incident there, and people say, oh yeah, well, we were bound to get one or two of those. But if there's a constant stream of them now, and we're getting to the stage where you'd have to be nervous about the Intercounty Championship. There's no two ways about it.
Well, you would have to be nervous for the Intercounty Championship if you're wedding yourself stringently to the current calendar as it's laid out. I think if the powers that be are saying that the All-Ireland football final and the All-Ireland hurling final are going to happen on the 13th and the 19th of December, then there's probably going to be a few casualties along the way. If you look at what happened, for instance, in London on Tuesday and Monday night, West Ham, So just before West Ham were due to play Hull in a League Cup game, the West Ham doctor walked into the West Ham dressing room and pulled the manager, Josh Cullen, and Issa Dia up out of the dressing room to say, lads, you're all positive, ye have to leave. Now, right being right, that game should not have gone ahead. And one would hope that if something similar happened in a GAA context, that that's exactly what would happen, as in the game would just be either abandoned, postponed, cancelled, or whatever, refixed. And this is something that, like, if that can happen in an environment whereby they're tested, as far as I'm aware, twice weekly, or possibly even more than that, then there's absolutely every chance that there will be a situation will arise with an inter-county team through the course of this championship, especially as cases become more proliferant around the country. But then you have to ask yourself the question, why are we wedding ourselves so strictly to these dates? And okay, if, for instance, the championship was to drift out, take a couple of weeks off of Christmas and drift out into January, so what? You know, what's the big, like there's no point in us trying to finish it in some big mad rush so we can begin the leagues, because they're going to be just as problematic when they restart at whatever time they restart, you know, in March or April. So if you have to build in a week or two's grace because there's an issue with certain counties or a certain fixture, then I think there's nothing to say that you shouldn't allow yourself that little bit of wiggle room. I think the problem is when you sort of back yourself into a corner on the calendar, and then you've nowhere to go when you're presented with the problem. Yeah. That, to me, doesn't make a huge amount of sense.
Yeah. Cara, in your own paper today, we have the Ulster Council Secretary, Brian McAvoy, not really going into detail, but kind of going along with what Rory's saying there, in that, you know, withdrawing a county from the Ulster Championship will be an absolute last resort and something they really don't want to do. Did he kind of elaborate in any way on how they will deal with it if we get a Donegal situation, you know, in November?
Well, in fairness, it was Neil Loughran that did the review rather than myself, so yeah. I'm not sure what, you know, the quotes that are there. I'm not aware of the conversation, but look, I think the Ulster would be probably the same as anybody else. They're loath to upset the balance of the championship over it, and would, you know, try to keep a team involved for as long as they could. But, you know, you look, it is, as Rory says, like, it's very, very tight. There's no real wiggle room if the dates are going to stay as they are. There's very, very little you can do. Like Donegal, as it stands, if this had happened the week of the Tyrone game, they'd almost certainly have to be put out of the championship because of the dates for the semi-finals and the Ulster final and the All-Ireland. Everything's knocked on. So, you know, and you don't want that. You know, and especially, I suppose, you know, you look at Dublin and the infection rates there and all the chat about lockdown there. Like, and, you know, for a championship that Dublin have to be put out of over an outbreak, you know, it would just completely demean the entire All-Ireland, really. Like, and so I could almost agree with Rory that there should probably be some form of wiggle room allowed. And given that the inter-county window is pushing into a new inter-county window in the turn of the year, where it's McKenna Cup and League and whatever it is, they should do their best to try and not put counties out of the championship. And if that means pushing your All-Ireland final back into January, into early February, whenever it has to be, just, you know, you sort of go along with it, because, you know, there's nobody can plan anything at the minute. You know, you plan as best you can, but you can't expect that your plans will run smoothly, and so you just have to adapt. And, like, the National League is financially helpful for the GAA and for counties as well, but, you know, who knows if we'll even be allowed spectators in at that stage of the year either, in early next year. So, you know, what's the point of hanging back for that and pushing a championship into a window that you don't really need to do?
Yeah. Obviously, complicating issues in Ulster, I suppose, is Aidan, is the two jurisdictions. And again, harking back to your under-13 management experience, I know that you were a bit frustrated a few months ago about the situation around challenge matches. You know, you could go play one in, what was it? You could go play one over the border in Louth, but you couldn't play one in Armagh at the time, or vice versa. But you know, this isn't going to go away, and obviously Stormont are going to deal with things differently from how things are dealt with by the Irish government, and that can be a real headache for under 13 football coaches, Ulster secretaries, inter-county managers, fans. It there's just a lot there that can get confused, can get muddled, and you know, can just make things very difficult.
I think there's an appreciation at all sides that a lot of flexibility is going to be required here. Yeah. And as Rory says, if it goes into January, so be it. I don't think pre-season competitions are scheduled for 2021. I think they're gone. So there is a window there when a natural fit anyway, if required. There's a couple of things that are factors in this. Jurisdiction-wise, obviously there can be implications, but I think we might need to be looking at midweek games, you know, as kind of fallback fixture dates. I don't think you can set any of the fixtures beyond first round that as set in stone, and maybe even the first round as we get closer. Practical things that if someone in a squad tests positive, this is certainly the guidance in the north at the minute. Obviously, they have to isolate for 10 days. But anybody who's deemed a close contact have to isolate for 14 days, irrespective of if they pass a test or not. So, you know, if there's a test, if there's a positive in a camp here at the minute, and some of the teammates of that positive test are asked to self-isolate, then it's 2 weeks before that next fixture can happen. So that is a complication. I think these administrators at the outset are going to have to, with the best will in the world, accept that this is going to happen. And if we want to keep teams in the competition, that it's going to have to be facilitated. I think there does have to be a limit to that also. So you may get one of those dispensations potentially, but getting two and three just makes the competition untenable, I think, at that stage. So there have been, I think you cited the Down Club Championship, Downpatrick. There have been examples where clubs have just had to step aside and the championship rolls on. It certainly, as Carr says, would devalue the championship if certainly one of the key contenders had to step out. But ultimately, it's probably better that the competition runs and finishes as best as possible rather than we don't have a champion. A lot of these games are going to be no theaters anyway. We get to kickoff point or certainly halfway through it.
I think another, and what people don't realise, Mikey and Carr and Aidan, is it's very, very tight. Like, this is run off over 8 weekends. So you have to remember there is take for each code. So take 2 of those weekends out for the semi-finals in hurling and the semi-finals or the finals in hurling. So it's actually only 6 weekends. So you're running off an championship that used to take 5 months, right? 5 months it used to take in some cases. You're running it off in 6 weekends. It's extremely tight. There is no wiggle room here. And I think that's what people, I don't think, have grasped really just yet.
Carr, it's impossible to imagine the situation that Aidan's painted there not occurring in the championship at some point, you know, players having to self-isolate when one of their teammates tests positive or even has a test, because like it's happening in the Premier League. It happened to Zlatan Ibrahimovic yesterday, and these are professional footballers operating in bubbles, which are carefully managed. Inter-county footballers, inter-county hurlers are amateurs. They all have day jobs, or they're going to Queen's, or they're going to another university. And it is, you know, it's illogical to think that we are not going to get positive tests in inter-county squads. We already have them in Donegal.
Absolutely. Like, you know, as you say, the professional footballers and those boys are in bubbles and they're away on their own and isolated on their own a lot of the time. And whereas like our fellas are working in society and just living their normal lives as much as you can live a normal life at the minute. Like, and it just,
a lot of them are on the front line, Carr. Guards and teachers and nurses, like they're on the front line.
Especially teachers, you know, as you go into the county game now, so many teachers, and they're obviously back in their natural habitat at work a lot of the time. So it is just impossible, as you say, to imagine that we'll get a free run at a championship, and then it's how much wiggle. You know, the case in Donegal where the county final has been postponed until the 7th of October, the Wednesday night, and you know they were just fortunate that they had that time, that wiggle room, because had it been, you know, had their initial dates been a fortnight down the line, and then having to postpone and having to run into the county window of games, it would have been a bigger issue, because then obviously there's a real pulling match between the two sides as to who, you know, who has the Kilcare and the Neve Connell players, who owns them, if you like. And you look at the club final, you know, the way Donegal are going, they're all Ireland contenders. Like, so you're looking at the club final being in January or February time, away, removed from the club championship, had that happened, you know. So another county football and hurling don't have that time. They don't have that luxury. It's going to be very, very tight, and there's going to be, you know, the knock on. So say Donegal and Tyrone had to be postponed. Well, the winners are due to play the winners of Derry and Armagh. Is it fair on Derry and Armagh to be sitting about for 2 or 3 weeks waiting to see what happens? And you know, there's all that. It's the knock on effects that you sometimes don't realise, and it's, you know, they would need to have, you know, counties aware of what the contingencies are, I think. You know, let the counties know in advance of, look, if this happens, this is where we'll go, this is what we'll do, this is the dates we'll move to. Or if they can't, they can't.
Well, one problem, though, I think with that, and I have huge amount of sympathy for anybody that's in positions of management or authority now, and we often hear this thing where people say, sure, they're making it up as they go along. And I say to myself, yeah, they probably are making it up as they go along. And you will go, well, in case of global pandemic, you know, press button A. You know, so, like, I think a lot of the time they're making up because that's all anyone can do.
I think there will be a flexible here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, listen, game can't happen this week. The only possible game we can do is Wednesday week. In normal circumstances, keeping their games during the week, you know, player welfare or whatever.
Yeah.
1-30 on that squad will be saying, absolutely, if the options are play the game or don't play the game, it'll be whatever I have to do to play the game. And I think that'll be across the board, boards, players, coaching, administrators.
Absolutely.
And that'll help us facilitate it. It's not a silver bullet either, because
there'll
be a lot of hurdles to get across.
Aidan, in your experience as an intercounty manager, would it be possible to prepare a team for intercounty championship while not having any of them be categorized as close contacts of each other? Could you do everything outdoors? Could you, like, I think we're allowing for close contact outdoors in a physical environment. I don't think that's at any point as a match being counted as close contact. Could you prepare a team while never meeting indoors and always maintaining a social distance?
Well, you can. None of it's ideal, but everybody's in the same boat, Mikey. So, you know, it's a level playing field from that perspective. There's a lot that you can do remotely now. I think actually the lockdown period has been a real education for people involved with sports teams, in that you don't always have to have a meeting 3 times a week. You don't have to keep them for an hour and a half after training. You know, this can be done. The technology is there to analyze and feedback that can all be done digitally. Now there's a time and a place where, you know, face to face is far more impactful, but in the situation we're in, that's not absolutely necessary. And I think at this stage, with 6 or 7 months of practice, I think intercounty teams are going to have this pretty well down at this stage. I think the bigger impact of all of this is haven't had much time on the pitch. They're not going to have a lot of time on the pitch before certainly National League games start. And, you know, conditioning is going to be what it's going to be. You know, teams that are spending time over the next 6 weeks working on their conditioning are wasting their time. You know, players are going to come back after their club outings in whatever shape they're in. And that's going to be basically the baseline. The big impact is going to be coaches can make an impact with, you know, playing patterns, game plan, you know, what you do when you have the ball, what you do when you don't have the ball. And the teams that make the most ground with that are the teams that are going to, you know, make the most impact. And probably it favours the teams that have been together the longest and have the most sort of muscle memory in terms of what they do. There's a change of management in Dublin, so maybe that impacts there. normal patterns or whatever, but there's probably enough residual, what do we do in these situations, with them. So, and maybe teams that have most experience winning together will probably get a bounce here at the start.
Yeah, you'd have to think, you have to feel for those new managers like Saporic Joyce and the others. It's going to be a very tough baptism of fire.
He was having a good league campaign though, yeah. Saporic Joyce, wasn't he? He'd gotten off to a good start. I would, especially given the strength of Galway football and the way Cara Finn are blitzing teams again, and he's added a couple of players. I see Gary Sice is back on the mix at 36, yeah, which is fantastic to see. And, okay, they're with Mayo and a couple of those. To me, are definitely a team to watch.
Yeah. Mm. Rory, inter-county retirements sort of puzzle me a wee bit at the minute, yeah, because it's a very short blast here. For
why give up now?
Even if you're can knock or you think you're not going to be 100%, you probably contribute something. You know, if you can get yourself at a certain level, you can contribute something coming on. The last 10 minutes of a match could be crucial. Not to second guess anybody's motivations or whatever, but you would have thought this window could be negotiated with work and personal circumstances to make it work for a couple of months. But listen, the lesson, the commitment or the hours that are needed, and they're back on that. Most of them are back on that treadmill already. But it's going to be a different kind of environment for them, certainly. And it'll be interesting to see how newish managers, you know, first year managers are going to have a real challenge in trying to mould together a team to be ready.
Just to go back to Ulster just before we finish up, Cathair, you're obviously speaking to plenty of players and managers in the course of your work. What's the general mood? Are people nervous? Are people kind of just ploughing ahead, keeping their heads down? Are they making contingency plans? What's the general feeling as far as you can see?
Well, it's funny, you know, just on that topic of fellas retiring and not, like, and not everybody, you know, there's no consensus as such, like, but you are talking to a lot of people who, and you can see, you know, we've had a lot of interviews in the paper over the last wee while with inter-county players saying, look, you know, I'd have been happy if we'd have just canned the season and started over again next year and go from there. And I think, you know, again, that's obviously not everybody, and the vast majority are there playing, but I just think it's maybe whether the appetite is there for a winter championship. You've sort of got used to playing a bit of dry ball now and a bit of free ball in the summer with the club, and you know, the players again you're talking about absolutely have loved the idea of not being pulled and dragged, you know, getting a window with their club where they got a good run at it and then going and playing county football or vice versa, whichever it is. But it's whether the appetite exists for a winter championship on the whole. You know, the lack of spectators, I don't think many people have considered how cold Croke Park is going to be on the 19th of December. Like, it's not a warm place at the best of times, and there's going to be nobody in it. So it's going to have a strange feeling about it. But look, there's a sense of absolutely play on, but it's very different. You know, you forget that none of these players have ever played in knockout Ulster Championship. You know, it didn't exist when a lot of them were born, never mind playing football. So there's that element to it as well. And ordinarily, you know, Donegal and Tyrone in a straight knockout Ulster Championship might be just, I mean, I've been talking about it all year. And despite the circumstances, everybody's still looking forward to it. But it would just be something else if we were able to have a bit of a crowd at it.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Aidan. And we'll finish on this point that maybe the feelings of the participants haven't quite been taken into account here. A winter championship in front of no crowds with a lot of uncertainty, it mightn't actually be the most appealing thing in the world.
Yeah, so I have to say that hasn't been my experience talking to county players. Like, the, you know, there certainly was reservations, but as soon as a calendar came out and an opportunity to get their teeth into it, it's been Armagh, they're turning away and one here. Like, you know, you could play two National League games, play your first championship game, and it's over. 3 weeks competition, you know. So that has added a bit of spice to it. There's no holding back. There's no, I'll be ready for the back door. You know, it's full on from the start. And certainly the teams that are training at the minute are high intensity at this stage. You know, it's they've come from the club, which is was a great window for them. Everybody committed to it. It's great that they weren't under pressure. But those that are now back with the county, a serious step up, and it's a really exciting prospect for most of them. This knockout side of things, even for teams that are in that tier below, they're thinking, Jesus, we just need to have a good day to take out a Donegal or a Tyrone or whatever, and we can win an Ulster Championship. And if you get to a last four potentially and have a good day, you're in an All-Ireland final. Yeah. You know, there's no back door. If Dublin get caught somewhere, they're not coming back at it. You know, so there's all of that in the mix that isn't always in the mix. You know, teams this time of year are thinking before Championship starts, Super 8, is it back door? Big teams will all be there, even if they lose a game. And then the real Championship starts. Well, there's no more of that. The real Championship starts when first round comes and you're beaten, you're gone.
Yeah. One small thing I would make an appeal though, Mikey, and I'm sure, look, the two lads might have different views here, one being an ex-manager of an inter-county team, obviously, and another working in the media. I think I would make a strong appeal to all county managers and teams and county boards. They're going to have to be a little bit more cooperative with media. You have to bear in mind, this is a championship like we've never had before. The only place to see this championship will probably be through a little screen, a little box in the corner of a sitting room. They're going to have to give a little bit more. They're going to have to be a small bit more cooperative, they're going to have to allow us get a little bit closer than they have done heretofore. And I know people will say, of course, he will say that, you know, producing the Sunday game and all of that. But at the same time, like, there is a responsibility here on people that are shielding and cocooning, people that can't get to the games. You know, look, if you want to talk to these people directly, they're not going to be able to see you in the flesh. You know, come on. You know, in the spirit of all of this, we're all in this together, apparently. You know, give us a small bit more leeway when it comes to access and that type of thing. I'd hope that would be part of it, but you don't.
I have kids at home who are sport mad, and what they can't tell you about Premier League players I never heard of, from companies I never heard of, you know, their ratings and all the rest of it.
Where they're born, who they played everything. With before, you know, it's crazy.
Bring up interviews with them on YouTube in 5 seconds. You know, they can do all of that. And they know their own county's players reasonably well. You know, they could recognise them. But, you know, top 10 stars beyond that. But do they know all of the best players in the county or in the country? They don't. And that's down to profile. And, you know, it doesn't take away from a player to do an interview. It doesn't take away from a player to do something that engages with sort of our younger players who are coming through, who need role models, who need to be able to aspire to somebody else's journey. And I think we've taken that away when the opportunity has been there. And there's no logic to don't do interviews. There's no logic to stay away from the media. There's no logic to any of that. And what we actually need is to bring those players to the masses a wee bit more. And this could open the door to all of that, where the experience, if the experience is good this year, then hopefully managers will see the benefit of it.
This is an open invitation to all intercounty footballers, hurlers and their managers to come on the RTGA podcast. Come on, Grant, come on and say hello to everybody. Lads, we will leave it at that. Actually, thanks to Cara, Aidan and Rory. We've the Cavan football final. Speaking of Ulster football, Cavan football final on RTE2 this Saturday evening.
You're looking forward to it, Mikey. It should be a good one. I mean, a bit of an upset. Crosherlaw, I think is how they pronounce it, versus King's Court Stars, and both weren't fair. Like, I mean, I think Crosherlaw beat Castlerahan in the semi-final and they weren't expected to win. And King's Court beat Cavan Gales, and that was considered a big, big upset. So you have two unlikely teams in the final. A lot of excitement in Cavan ahead of it. And like, we're really looking forward to going up there. So it should be a bit of crack. Just again, it's a pity there's not going to be anybody there to see it. There'll be a few, but sure. Yeah. But it should be good fun. 7 o'clock tomorrow night. And we have Mickey Graham and Terry Hyland on the panel. So you've the current and former Cavan managers on board.
Very good. And obviously Saturday and Sunday Sport will have reports from around the grounds. It's a busy weekend of county finals, and we will have the reports on the RTE website and the RTE News app. Don't forget the RTE Rugby and RTE Soccer podcasts are also available to download. So we will leave it at that. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again next week.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road. And that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it.